When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the College Football Survivor Show, where playoff survival is always on the line. Here are your co-hosts, Doug LaMaurice and Shahan Jeharaja.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We're going to run through the playoff regulars that did not make the college football playoff in 2021. Doug and Shahan, we on the Tuesday Apple podcast, we did who could be the next Georgia. Who could be the next Michigan? Who could be the next Cincinnati in the 2022 season? Because, Shahan, those were all new. And to think where we were at the, before last season, everybody was like, oh, I'm sick of the same old teams. Like, in the end, did you think people were excited that three of the four teams in the playoff were not regulars and Michigan and Cincinnati had never been there and Georgia had only been there once? That was good for the game, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was. And the funny thing is, right, we were Tank Bigsby staying in bounds away from not having any of the four teams, which I think is pretty exciting. And the thing is, too, right, I think that it's a good sign that these teams had to go through some of those traditional teams to be able to get there, right? Michigan had to beat Ohio State. Georgia had to beat Alabama to win the national championship. So I think that it was very well earned. I think it was good for the game for some of those teams to get in. Now, obviously, the blowouts in the playoff probably did not help the cause of that, but I do think that ultimately the game will be better that, you know, multiple new teams, a new team won a national championship and two new teams made the college football playoff for the first time. I think that's a good thing.
So that's why we're talking about could we get back to the old guard? So it's like, congratulations to the new guys, but what about the old guys? We're going to do a third, a third, a third on this podcast. We're going to talk about Clemson. We're going to talk about Oklahoma. We're going to talk about Ohio State in that order. What do those programs, because it is a program, not just a team discussion, right? That there's all three of those programs underwent pretty major upheaval from a program standpoint. It's not just like, hey, get a little more talent on defense or hey, your quarterback plays a little bit better. All three of them, one has a new head coach. Two lost both coordinators, one changed one coordinator. Big moves that affect not just 2022. So let's start with the Clemson Tigers, Shahan, and the idea of could Clemson be back in the playoff in 2022? I think a lot of this discussion from a program standpoint centers around Dabo Swinney in the new era. And Clemson has maybe only dabbled, for instance, in the transfer portal so far compared to some other teams. Weirdly, Hunter Johnson, who was like their five-star recruit before Trevor Lawrence and then left and then went to Northwestern and did nothing at Northwestern, is now going back to Clemson, which is strange. It's fine. It's just a little weird. But I want to start there big picture because there's some very specific things about their recruiting peaking, where their defense is, DJ Uiagalelei playing better, their quarterback options behind him, the coordinator changes, all that stuff. But it starts with Dabo. It does start with Dabo. And I do think sometimes there's an outside perception with him of, does he sort of like the new era of college football? Or is he kind of like an old school guy who doesn't like NIL and doesn't like the transfer portal? And how will he adapt in this new era? Do you have any questions about Dabo Swinney adapting?
Yeah, the funny thing is, you mentioned the transfer portal. I want to double check this, but I believe that they've only taken like two or three transfers in Dabo Swinney's entire career. Like, they do not take transfers. They tend to stick with their guys. And I think that ends up being a draw for a lot of players. The idea that we're not going to give up on you. We want to see you through sort of thing. But I think at the same time, right, look, we're just in a different era of college football. And you mentioned bring back Hunter Johnson, the former Clemson quarterback. I mean, I think that they would rather stick with their guys. But I think that, you know, the interesting thing about Clemson is that they have had a great plan A. They have had as good a plan A as I think any program in college football. They've won two national championships behind their plan A. But, you know, we compare Dabo Swinney, who in some ways is a very new age type coach in terms of the way that he interacts with his players. You know, I think that he does need to kind of get with the times a little bit. I mean, especially in this kind of year, I think that this era and this particular year is especially important because we do have this fifth year senior rule, right? So you have more movement than there's ever been to kind of sit there on by the wayside while Alabama adds Jameson Williams. I mean, what do you do with that? You know, you can't be sitting pat while other teams are getting better. And I understand, you know, Dobbs, when he feels like he's been able to do things, quote unquote, the right way, that he's been able to recruit kids from high school and kind of develop them like that. But I don't think that it takes away from what you're doing, what you've built there, the promises that you've made to your players by saying, okay, you know, we need a left tackle because we, you know, we lost some guy to the draft or somebody got hurt or something like that, right? I mean, I don't think that takes away from the central premise of their program, which is, again, we want to be a very player-focused program. But if they don't adjust like that, everybody else is.
I do think targeted use of the portal is probably the smart thing for the top-tier programs, right? And again, Alabama, they're Alabama, but they bring in Jameson Williams and they bring in Henry To'o, and both those guys help Alabama a lot this past season. Ohio State brought in Justin Fields. Imagine where Ohio State would have been a couple years ago if Ohio State didn't have Justin Fields, right? That you, LSU and Joe Burrow, right? I mean, my gosh, like Joe Burrow brought it all together. We can see how the targeted at a key position where you have a weakness, you know, Michigan State's a good example of you can build up a whole thing, right? Almost instantaneously. That's not what Clemson and Bama and Ohio State and schools like that want to do or need to do. But targeted acquisitions in the portal, I do think, is a way to go. But I also could see, I think the way he handles coaches and the way he handles players comes from the same philosophy, which is like, I am going to be loyal to our guys. And so they lose Brent Venables as defensive coordinator, who'd been there a decade. They lose Tony Elliott as offensive coordinator, who'd been there a decade, like 7 years as an offensive coordinator. And they promoted from within. And I do think whenever, and it's the same thing, we're going to move our guys up. We're not going to look for outside answers. We're going to develop our guys and move them up. I do think that there is room, Shahan, in a world where we're just going to get accustomed to movement, coaches movement, player movement, that establishing yourself as like the loyalty program or the we believe in our guys, we'll take care of you. If you come in here kind of on the bottom rung, as a lower level assistant or as a true freshman and do your thing, you will get your chance. We reward work and loyalty. I do think you can stake out that corner in this world and win with that. And I feel like he's kind of done that. That they, again, Saban runs through the best assistants he can find, come in for a year or two, go on to another great job, get a head coaching job. Dabo's been that way with his assistants, and now he's being that way with his players. I do think there's room to win as like the shining example of that philosophy.
And I think that's fair, right? But here's the issue. When you're in a position where you've got, for example, I mean, they obviously have Cade Klubnik coming in, who's a kid from Texas who obviously is really good, but they have two five-star quarterbacks on the roster right now in Hunter Johnson and DJ Uiagalelei, who both seem to not be very good, right? And so the issue with that kind of strategy is that if you miss, if somebody's wrong, if somebody doesn't develop the way that you like, you're kind of stuck, right? You're kind of screwed in some ways. And the other issue is that they're losing kids to the portal. It's not like they're not, you know, it's not like they have the same 85 guys every single year. They're losing kids to the portal. And so the question is, you know, if you're going to be that program, which I think is fair, then you have to deal with the downswings, right? You have to deal with the years where there are two or three position groups that you didn't recruit very well, or there's two or three position groups where you just have kids who whiffed, who you thought that you recruited at an incredible level and you just didn't. And so are you willing to deal with that in the modern age of college football? Now, Dabo Swinney has unlimited cachet. I think that I saw somebody post something that was like, I think a screenshot of a Reddit post where basically the question was, if your coach was fired after the 2022 season, what needed to happen for that to be the case? And a Clemson fan was like, Dabo Swinney murdered multiple people. Like, that's what we're talking, right? Like, that's the level that we're talking of cachet. Dabo Swinney's not going to get fired. But at the same time, Are you willing to deal with these valleys? Are you willing to, for example, if you go into this year and DJ's still not very good and Hunter Johnson's still not very good, and you're put in a position where like Cade Klubnik needs to come in and be the savior in some ways, are you willing to deal with 2 years of development for that to happen? I mean, that's kind of what you're asking. And for these programs, you know, we talk about the four programs, Alabama, Oklahoma, Ohio State, and of course Clemson. These programs don't sit and wait. Right? Like, they don't sit and wait for guys to develop. They're supposed to compete every single year. So if Dabo Swinney wants to do that, it's going to be very hard to do it 100% of the time this way.
So I do think the loyalty idea was tested in one way last year with the quarterback situation. It's going to be tested in a new way with the assistant situation in 2022. We'll get to the assistants in a second. I want to talk about players a little bit. So in the end, a year ago, everybody going into last season, you looked at the three top quarterback recruits in the class of 2020, and they were at the three major programs in college football. Bryce Young at Alabama was number one, DJ Uiagalelei at Clemson was number two, and CJ Stroud at Ohio State was number three. The three quarterbacks in that class, all going into year two. And it was like, are all three of these guys going to hit? You know, even five stars. It's hard to go 100% on five stars. Two of the three hit, and one didn't. And I wonder, Shahan, is it as simple as saying, if you put Bryce Young or CJ Stroud on Clemson last year, would Clemson have made the playoff? And if you put DJ Uiagalelei on Alabama or Ohio State, would they have struggled in the way that Clemson struggled? And again, Clemson only lost three games, but it was they lost the opener to Georgia and then they lost early. They lost two more early. And so they had sort of had this idea of like they were out of it. They lost their fourth game to NC State and they lost their seventh game to Pitt. So like they were out of the playoff discussion. Is it that simple? And that's tough to put that on one guy, but like DJ just did not play that well. And Bryce Young sort of got it pretty early and CJ maybe had a little bit of a slow start, but really got it. I mean, like CJ Stroud by like week 10 or 11 was the Heisman favorite. And then Ohio State lost to Michigan. And then Bryce Young kept coming and coming. Man, I think there's a world where it's like you do that and it's like there is no story about Clemson hitting a bump because they got great quarterback play and they'd be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely curious about, you know, we don't need to turn this into a CJ Stroud discussion.
Oh, but we will later. We're going to get to Ohio State.
But, you know, it's like if DJ, because I do think that one thing, right? People forget. Dabo Swinney is a wide receivers coach. That's where he came up. And so they've historically had incredible wide receivers. And this year, they just didn't, you know, that their receivers didn't get separation. They really struggled. And so I think one of my questions is, right, like, is DJ bad all year if he's throwing to Garrett Wilson? Like, does he just have some leeway to figure it out? Whereas with this group of receivers, he clearly did not. Whereas, you know, kind of the flip side, right? You mentioned CJ Stroud kind of struggles at the beginning, but like, there's just so much leeway with how talented the receivers are that he has time to figure it out, you know? So I think that situation plays a lot in quarterback development. You know, I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that the teams that consistently develop quarterbacks are also the teams that have innovative offenses and good wide receivers. You know, I mean, I just think it's a lot easier to play football that way. And so, you know, I'm probably a little hesitant to just say like, oh, well, you just toss in quarterback X into Clemson. They would have been a lot better. I mean, I think that I probably feel that way to some extent about Bryce Young, but like we saw when Bryce Young didn't have those two star receivers in the national championship game, I don't think he played poorly by any means. I think some people try to blame him for that. I don't, but it's just a totally different ball game, right? I mean, he could do everything right, which to be clear, DJ Uiagalelei does not do everything right. But, you know, I think that I would say that the biggest issue that they've had is just the passing game in general. And DJ's a big part of that. I think the receivers are a big part of that. I think protection is a big part of that. I mean, when we're in a situation where we're talking about Clemson's five-star quarterback being ranked last in the ACC in passer rating, not a perfect metric. I'm not trying to say that. But to be ranked last, I mean, what are we doing here? What are we doing here if that's the case?
No, I think it's all connected, right? And I think some people during the course of last season questioned, like, is Clemson's offense a little stale? Or, like, do they need to do something different? Because you have this 6'5 guy with all the skills who just does not look right, right? Who's not playing that well. But then you go to the protection. You go to his skill guys compared to the skill guys at Ohio State or Alabama or Oklahoma, and you can find some other reasons in there. I do think the Cade Klubnik thing is interesting because it does set up the idea that, again, last year, it was DJ or bust. I mean, not that that's a bad thing. He's the number two quarterback recruit in the country. He had played well as a true freshman. He went to Notre Dame and threw for 400 yards as a true freshman when they needed him, when Trevor Lawrence was out because of COVID protocol. So like that was real. And it was not unreasonable to be like, yeah, well, we're all in with DJ. What are you talking about? But now that we've seen it happen, Shahan, and DJ was a popular Heisman pick a year ago. I don't know that he'll be a popular Heisman pick now, but some people will play the dark horse card, whatever. Now that we've seen what happened with Spencer Rattler and Caleb Williams at Oklahoma, Cade Klubnik as a five-star quarterback coming in, if for whatever reason the offense is not working, whether it's really on DJ or not, they've got somebody else now. And I do think I like that plan of quarterback recruiting. Like, I have this fight on our Buckeye Talk podcast all the time. Like, don't recruit a five-star quarterback in every class because it just like muddies up the waters. And then if multiple guys get frustrated and transfer, then you don't have a backup. But like the idea of five-star, three-star, five-star, three-star, that like you space the five stars apart. So the true freshman five-star comes in, backs up the junior five-star for a year, the junior five-star goes to the NFL, and then the other guy can come in and start in year two. I think that's a normal plan. That's what Clemson has in place right now. But it also means you could go to Cade in week five if it doesn't look like it's working with DJ. And I know you've talked about Cade. I think he's the real deal probably, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that he's a really good player. I will say – it's a little, I've got Quinn Ewers' brain, which is that I saw them play against each other in the state championship game, and it's just like, oh my God, Quinn Ewers looks like an adult, and Cade Klubnik looks like a really good high school prospect. But like, I do think that, you know, the biggest thing about Cade is that he's a gamer, right? Which sometimes I think that DJ struggled with when he was put into adverse situations, he didn't react very well to them. And I think that Cade Klubnik is very different in that regard. I think that he does, you know, he sees the pressure, he deals with it. I think that he's much more comfortable on the move. I think that he's more comfortable throwing on the move. And so I think from that perspective, he could be a big addition for this team, especially, you know, cause that's the thing. Clemson, more than anything else, especially at the beginning of the year before Will Shipley really came on at running back, they didn't have any playmakers on offense at all, you know, at any level of the field. And so when you're dealing with zero playmakers, it doesn't really matter whether everybody else is doing their job, right? I mean, it's you can't put a game manager, not that DJ's a game manager, but you know, you can't put a game manager into a situation where there's no game to manage, right? Like, you need guys to make plays around him, and they didn't have the personnel, they didn't have the development to be able to do that. Now, that's the flip side, is that going to change? They just lost Justin Ross to the NFL draft. And so there's not kind of an obvious next guy in line to be a star receiver for them. Now, again, they've obviously recruited the position well because, like I mentioned, Dabo Swinney's a wide receiver coach. I have confidence that they're going to find some guys, but we haven't seen it to this point. And if there isn't better production from wide receivers, I mean, it's just hard to see this offense being sort of a turnkey type fix.
They should be better in the backfield. The Kobe Pace, Will Shipley duo should be pretty good in 2022. Will Shipley got hurt late in the year, but he was a true freshman a lot of people liked. We talked a year ago, again, you know, before last season, they had a veteran guy who was kind of in there, but you didn't know. And then they kind of, he lost his job and he transferred in the middle of the year. But like, they have two young guys they can believe in running back. They have a lot of people back on offense, but this is still a defense first team. Even with Brent Venables leaving, it's a defense first team. They gave up 14 points or fewer in 8 of their 13 games last year. Again, they lost to the national champ in their opener. They lost 10-3, right? I mean, like, to Georgia. And we knew that game. That game set the path of the season. Think about if Clemson wins that game. Who knows? I mean, maybe Clemson maybe gets a little jolt of confidence and finds a way and then figures it out. And DJ gets a boost of confidence. And maybe Georgia, like, goes in the tank. Like, that wound up, we thought it was a huge game. And it was a huge game. But this defense, one of the things that I find interesting about Clemson in 2022, they had become a national power without recruiting as a true national power. They were winning national championships while they were recruiting 10th best class, 12th best class, 15th best class. Then their recruiting sort of caught up to their status. According to the 247 Sports composite ratings, their 2020 class, which will be guys who are third-year players this year, That was the number three class in the country. And the 2021 class was the number five class in the country. That was really the first time they double dipped and had two classes like that. You look at the 2020 class, it had five stars in that class, guys who will be juniors now. One of those guys, Marcus Bowman, was a running back. He transferred. He's gone. The other four guys, DJ, and then three defensive guys, Brian Brzee and Miles Murphy on the defensive line, Trenton Simpson at linebacker, all of whom are great. And Brian Brzee got hurt in the fourth game last year. He's supposed to be one of the best defensive players in the country. He was a freshman All-American the year before. That's like what Bama does, right? It's like, well, you do this, whatever. And it's like, oh, we have, what's gonna, what are you going to do? Well, our defense is led by some 30 or five-star guys. We should be okay. People think all those guys could be first-round picks. So I do think there's a world where this has been a defensive program in a lot of ways. Yeah, they lost their coordinator, but the talent level is almost higher than it's ever been. On that defensive side of the ball, they played pretty decent defense at times last year. And if that's right, because a year ago, we were saying, like, who's got the best defense in the country? Well, it's either Bama, Georgia, or Clemson. Turned out it was Georgia. What Georgia won the national title with the best defense in the country. There's a version of Clemson that does that. What if the Clemson, it's like, oh, who's the next Georgia? It's Clemson. Because Clemson's going to play that level of defense in 2022. And then DJ and Shipley and Pace just have to be good enough and they're off and rolling. That's interesting to me.
Yeah, well, and I mean, I think the other thing too is that I don't want to be too doom and gloom here either, because Clemson, like you mentioned, went 10-3, won 10 games anyway, but in their awful season that we're all writing off as the death of Dabo Swinney, you know, he lost 10-3 to the national champs, like you mentioned. They lost in double overtime to NC State, and then they lost by 10 to Pitt. So like, Pitt was really good. Pitt ended up winning the ACC. That's not like that bad a loss.
Had a Heisman finalist at quarterback, yeah.
Right. Like, this was the best year in Pitt history by quite a bit. And this was the worst year at Clemson in like 10 years. So for those two things to overlap is okay. It's not that big a deal. And so, you know, you do start looking to 2022 and, you know, I mean, Pitt's not going to be as good. They added Keaton Slovis. So like, they're going to have a guy at quarterback, but it's not going to be quite the same. You know, I mean, I think Wake Forest is interesting, but Clemson in their bad year beat Wake Forest by 3 touchdowns, right? I mean, this is still a really, really good football team. And yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that you mentioned. This is one of the things that makes DJ not hitting so surprising is, like you mentioned, they don't miss very often. I mean, to have that many 5-stars hit consistently, it's not normal, right? I mean, this isn't, I mean, they're programs that bring in 5-stars and then they just disappear, right? Or they're not contributors. You know, this is not Clemson. Clemson brings these guys in and they play like 5-stars almost right from the start. So, you know, I think that there's still a lot of opportunity for them to be really good. I think that certainly one of the things that we have to look at just big picture is that, again, there's not an obvious team that's going to knock them off. So even though I don't know whether Clemson's going to be an awesome team in 2022, because I still do worry about that passing offense, I think they could, you know, potentially have time to figure it out. Cause the only, I believe at this point, the only set game that we know is at Notre Dame on November 5th. That's going to be a big game for them. I think the rest of their conference schedule, they still haven't released as yet, but you know, Miami, it's a first year situation. Wake Forest, again, they were better than last year. Florida State shouldn't be back. NC State, I think, is actually going to be a really interesting game again this year, but if they're coming off a loss, I know they'll be motivated for that game. So it's still very possible for them to go 12-0 and make the college football playoff, even if they're not 100% back.
And they swap out Georgia for Georgia Tech as their big non-conference early season. So they're not going to have that kind of test early. South Carolina as their rivalry game late. And again, I mentioned South Carolina. Spencer Rattler will be there on the Tuesday podcast. So I do think they probably get right back in the race and let's end up with the assistants. Tony Elliott hired as the head coach at Virginia. Brent Venables hired as the head coach at Oklahoma. Brandon Streeter, who had been at Clemson for a long time as the quarterback's coach, elevated to offensive coordinator. Wes Goodwin, who had been around Clemson in various forms and various times, elevated to defensive coordinator. I remember when Chad Morris was maybe the first or one of the first million-dollar assistants. He was sort of a key early on in the Dabo Swinney era, like sort of this offensive guru who had come out of the Texas high school ranks. And it was like, oh man, like how much is Chad Morris sort of propping up this whole Dabo Swinney thing? And then Chad Morris left to be the head coach at SMU. Then he went to Arkansas. Nothing bad. Did not work. And then wound up, like, was the Auburn offensive coordinator. He's back at Texas high school football. He's come all the way full circle. And Dabo Swinney's being Dabo Swinney. So the idea, I think you can – Venables is as good of a college football assistant coach as we've seen in the modern era. But Dabo has been here before, and he lost a dude that you felt like maybe was maybe irreplaceable, and they were fine. Jeff Scott and Tony Ellett took over. That offense was fine. They did their thing. And so do you think they're closer to fine, or do you think they're closer to like, wow, it's really hard to lose two excellent coordinators in the same offseason and come back and be the same team?
I think a little of both. When we talk about them competing at a national level, that's where I start to wonder, you know, is that going to be enough? And it might be. I mean, when you have a system, right, when you have an idea of what you want your team to do, I think it makes it easier to cycle through coaches. And I do think it shows, obviously, great loyalty to kind of promote guys from within that you believe in instead of, you know, going and trying to hire a Manny Diaz who's probably going to leave in a year or two, right? Like, I think that that's the big thing, right? You know, they want to be the stability program, and they've done it at a really high level for several years at this point. So I think it was the right decision to do it. I am curious, though, because we haven't seen these guys have to coach before, right? I mean, other than the bowl game. So there are a little bit of unknowns until it happens. But like you said, they've had unknowns before. And the other thing, too, is again, I keep coming back to it. Who in the ACC is really going to do anything about it, right? I mean, who in the ACC is really going to push them? I mean, if, you know, I think that in a down Clemson year, we saw last year that the ACC, not all that good outside of Clemson. I mean, Pitt's a decent team. I mean, Wake Forest is a team that I love. You know, I can't wait to start our Demon Deacons podcast. But at the same time, they have 13 games before they really have to face a test, you know, and then they make the college football playoffs. So that's the benefit of being at Clemson, is that you kind of get to work your way through your struggles a little bit and just have to be ready in time for January.
Hopefully at some point, either Mike Norvell at Florida State or Mario Cristobal at Miami gets one of those programs rolling to the extent that Clemson is just not the only national power in the ACC. But for now, it remains Clemson. Yes or no? We're not going to ask, are they going to make the playoff in 2022? We're going to ask, are they going to be a true playoff contender in the thick of the playoff race in 2022? Clemson, yes or no, Shahan?
I'd say yes.
I'd say yes as well. Now, it's time for Oklahoma. We'll do that next on the College Football Survivor Show. The College Football Survivor Show, where playoff survival is always on the line. All right, interesting connection between these two programs. We just talked about Brent Venables leaving Clemson. He was waiting for the perfect job. Oklahoma's it. Lincoln Riley is out. Brent Venables is in. I don't know that we've ever seen Shahan, and it's one of these things I should probably do more research before I just start blathering into a microphone. But is that really, I mean, are podcasts really about research, or are they just mostly about blathering? I don't know. I don't really know what other podcasts do. I guess other people do research. Have we ever seen as drastic a shift in identity for a national college power sort of in the modern era than to go from the high-flying Lincoln Riley questionable defense ways to Brent Venables, one of the best defensive minds in college football, and now all their offensive guys are transferring? Like, this is an overnight 180 of what Oklahoma football is all about. Unless it's not. Am I going too far with that? Because I also went out and spent a bunch of money on Jeff Lebby to come be the offensive coordinator.
I mean, I think that the big thing is they're going to want to look like Clemson in a lot of ways, right? That's I think who they're going to model their program after, because, you know, this is something that at Baylor that I talked to Dave Aranda about. I think that being a good defensive coach and seeing a great offense on the other side that can take you to championship level, I think that's changed the way that Brent Venables thinks about football, right? And even when he was at Oklahoma, I mean, he was coaching alongside the air raid. He was coaching alongside Mike Leach. He was coaching alongside Mark Mangino. Like, he's coached alongside, you know,
great offensive minds before. So no, I don't think that this is going to be some situation where all of a sudden they're trying to, you know, play like Georgia. You know, this is not going to be Oklahoma shifting to play like Georgia, but I do think that it is going to be a much more defensive focused team. I think that the recruiting is going to be a lot more defensive focused. I think that one of the things too is that, and you see this at Clemson too, is that I think that they're going to recruit some of their better quote unquote athletes and put them on the defensive side of the ball. I think that you just naturally sometimes see that, as opposed to when somebody like Lincoln Riley is the head coach and you recruit a guy who can run fast and you're like, well, I guess he's a wide receiver. Guess he's our seventh wide receiver now. And so I do think that from that kind of philosophy, it's going to be a lot different. And I know, just being around the program and especially talking to you know, also fans of the program, they want to be physical. They want to get back to who, you know, Oklahoma was in the mid-2000s, right? Where it was a Bob Stoops team that was very defense first and had a great offense, but really, you know, really wanted to beat the crap out of you. You know, I think that a lot of them feel like, we're the program of Brian Bosworth and we're soft. How is that possible? And so, you know, I think that at least vocally, that's going to be a big priority with the program, is trying to be physical. Now, at the same time, if you're physical and your players aren't as good, like, you know, that's going to be an issue. But I do think that from the start, that's going to be a difference. Even I think on offense, I think that's one of those things, again, where like the culture kind of permeates down.
So do we think there is a real chance that when we think about teams that have been consistent playoff participants, that really it's going to be more about Lincoln Riley being a playoff participant than Oklahoma, and that USC is just going to take that Oklahoma spot or that Oklahoma consistency, and that 6 years from now, right? It's sort of like when you did that, people were doing that thing, LeBron James has made the conference finals 10 straight years or whatever it was. It's like, well, it was in Miami, it was in Cleveland, then it was with the Lakers, right? It's a LeBron stat. It's not a franchise stat. Is this going to be a Lincoln Riley stat, and that Oklahoma is just going to sort of lose its status as a true tier one program? And we're saying that if we say tier one in the playoff era has been Bama, Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma. Is Oklahoma going to lose that and USC is going to take it?
It's a good question. I don't know that I feel confident that USC is going to be a consistent every year type contender. Like, I don't think that, especially in the early going, it's going to be as consistent as it was at Oklahoma. But, you know, I mean, if you told me that Brent Venables was going to be coaching in the Big 12 for the next 10 years, I think I'd feel better about it than the idea of them trying to transition right as they're about to make a transition to the SEC. You know, I mean, I think that being in a position where I don't think that he'd be as successful year in, year out as Lincoln Riley, because I think that, you know, I think that quarterback play provides you a perhaps, you know, lower or a higher floor maybe than, you know, even great defense. But I do think that that Brent Venables would have them in the conversation to win the Big 12 every year. I think that they'd have a chance to go 12-1 a lot of years. And but if they're transitioning, right, let's just say it's 2023 that they end up moving over. If 2022 is a transitional year, then they get thrown into the SEC and have to beat Alabama to make the playoff. That's a huge issue to me, right? Because I don't think that they're going to do that in the short term. I just don't think that they are. And so I think that there is definitely a chance that it could end up being a Lincoln Riley set. Now, I think that what a lot of people in Oklahoma are banking on is the idea that maybe, you know, Lincoln Riley's the guy who can get you there, but he's not the guy who can win it, which, you know, I think there's some case for as well. But the question is Brent Venable the guy who can both get you there and win it? Because the reality is only a couple of coaches have done it.
So there's a lot of transition happening at Oklahoma right now. They're losing guys in the portal. We just said Clemson isn't doing much in the portal. Oklahoma's all about the portal right now, not necessarily by choice, but they have guys leaving. They have guys coming in. You look at some of the guys coming in. I think they have like a guy from Hawaii coming in. There's like a guy from Louisville coming in. You know, again, I don't know that that's the Oklahoma plan long term, but they're seeing guys move out. It really just feels like a ton of flux, a ton of, again, it might be more like what Michigan State did in 2021, was sort of patching it together as a one-year thing, not a cohesive program identity thing, but you got to get through. I understand why they're doing it, but it certainly feels like what Oklahoma is in 2022 is not going to be representative of what Oklahoma is going to be long term in this era. But it might be a little bumpy in year one. Is that especially? In the, I mean, I was like, I'm trying to. Caleb Williams transferred out. He might wind up at USC with Lincoln Riley. Dylan Gabriel, the former Central Florida quarterback, might be the guy. He's coming into Oklahoma, I guess. Is he going to be the starting quarterback? But that feels like just kind of like a patch for a year as well. Is this just what this is going to be? With the guys they've lost, the short-term guys they're bringing in, is this a patch it year for the Sooners?
It's hard to think that it won't be, right? I mean, the other thing, too, is that Dylan Gabriel is a really nice player, and he played really well at UCF. But doesn't he feel exactly like the kind of quarterback that like the entire Big 12 is built to stop at this point? I mean, in a lot of ways, right, the sort of Josh Heupel offense is what took over the 2012-2013 season. You know, we're in 2022 at this point. I'm curious whether Dylan Gabriel has the flexibility to kind of be able to grow on that. You know, I think that they're going to try to, I think, first figure out the defense. I think that that's going to be the big priority this year. A lot of the transfers that you're seeing are on the defensive side of the ball. And I think on offense, they're going to be okay with being a little bumpy. I think that they're going to be okay with not having quite as many playmakers as usual, because I do think that they want to almost use this more as a tone setting year than anything else. But yeah, I mean, I don't see this as being a turnkey operation. I don't see this as being a roster that's built in Brent Venables' image. I don't see this as being a culture that's built in Brent Venables' image. And the other thing, too, is that in the Big 12, I think you've got so many more contenders. I think Oklahoma State brings back a lot. Baylor brings back a lot. Iowa State has to start over, but you know what they've done. Texas obviously brought in a couple of key transfers, including Quinn Ewers at quarterback. Now, that doesn't make them a playoff contender, guys. But you know, there are a lot of teams. I mean, I think Texas Tech could be a problem. I think West Virginia, with what they brought in, could be a problem. Like the Big 12, I think, is just a much deeper league, for example, than the ACC is. And so, you know, if they do stumble, there are a lot more teams, I think, that are going to be able to get them, especially in the early going, than maybe at Clemson.
It's interesting. You look at the Oklahoma schedule. Almost every team you mentioned as maybe rising up at the Big 12 is in the second half of Oklahoma's schedule. Oklahoma starts, their non-conference is easy. UTEP, Kent State at Nebraska. Nebraska is constantly in flux.
7-win UTEP.
Let me tell you, talking about a bumpy start, if Brent Venables loses to UTEP in his opener at Oklahoma,
it's over.
People will be paying $20 million to get Lincoln Riley back in Norman.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, but you know, you talk about that at Nebraska game. Nebraska's added a lot, and Oklahoma kind of struggled with them last year because Nebraska played very well defensively, and I think I'm still taking Oklahoma to win that game. But if Brent Venables' third game is losing to Nebraska, I mean, and I don't even think that it would mean that Nebraska's bad, but like, just this is a rivalry that matters to people in Oklahoma, right? This is a historic Big Eight rivalry. If they go and in their third game lose to Nebraska, they'll find some way to not blame it on Brent Venables, but they will be upset. They will be very upset. And then after that, they play Kansas State, who also should be pretty good, at TCU. I don't think TCU is going to be very good. Then they get Texas. So if you're talking about three tough games in 4 weeks.
I'm trying to paint a picture of how Brent Venables can start 7-0. And you're like, oh, UTEP and Nebraska. I don't know, man. So I was going to say, like, it could be a world where they are 5-0. Going into that Texas game, which is like, Sark's like, okay, like, oh my God, Lincoln Riley left. Is there anybody happier about Lincoln Riley leaving Oklahoma than Steve Sarkisian? Oh my God. Like, if Steve Sarkisian can't jump on this, hey, everybody in the Southwest, hey, great receivers and great quarterbacks, if you want to sling it around, Lincoln Riley's gone. There's some guy over there who wants to ground and pound. Brent Venables, defense? What's defense? Come to Sark. Like, this is his opportunity. Texas has to win this game against Oklahoma. And I guess can I ask this? I know when you love when I just interject random Texas things into this podcast. Is Quinn Ewers going to be the starting quarterback at Texas this year?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. No question.
So Quinn Ewers, like that's a huge transitional game, because if Brent Venables loses that game, it's like, eh, well, it's a bump. We get it. You know, people will be. But like if Sark loses that game, it's like, you can't beat this version of Oklahoma. What are we doing here? Would be very interesting.
And by the way, to just touch on Texas, you know who they got week two?
Who?
They got Alabama.
Oh.
They have Alabama week two. They have UTSA, who they're going to beat, but it's going to like feel real bad in week three. They're at Texas Tech. Texas Tech hates them, and they've got like a pretty intriguing young roster. Then West Virginia, then Oklahoma. Like, they're going to probably only be a one-loss team heading into that Oklahoma game, but nothing will feel good. Absolutely nothing will feel good.
When we come back, we're going to take next week off. When we come back, we will do a whole podcast on why Texas will beat Alabama in week two. It'll be all about Quinn Ewers, and Shahan's head will explode. So that's a huge game, but there's like an opportunity here, right? But I do think one of the things that is happening is in a world where our Clemson discussion is like, well, if not Clemson, who, right? Maybe NC State will be good again, right? We get it. There's some solid programs there. The who is a little more interesting in the Big 12 right now, with Dave Aranda and what he's doing at Baylor, with Oklahoma State bringing a lot back. Oklahoma can't just get by on fumes, maybe to the degree that Clemson could. So, you know, I think this is a bumpy year. I don't think it's a catastrophic year. I think it's a patch it together year, but the schedule certainly is not as difficult. I mean, Brent Venables is glad Oklahoma's not played Alabama in week two. It's not as difficult as it could be. I think, Shahan, you could look at this, and this might be one of those where, like, week to week, Oklahoma maybe doesn't look great, and they look a little – there's a little lack of cohesion, but they still go 10-2, right, that they figure it out. I mean, it feels like maybe that would be possible. In the end, if the question is, will Oklahoma be in the thick of the playoff race in 2022? My answer would be no. What would your answer be?
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's no. And I think that you're right. I think that it's 9-3, 10-2, but they beat Oklahoma State on November 19th and like head into the offseason with good vibes. That's what it feels like.
And then they get their future figured out. And again, this is not, you know, Brent Venables will get his first recruiting class. He'll get some big-time defensive studs. They'll find a quarterback. Somebody's going to want to go be the quarterback there. They'll get even more active but more targeted in the portal rather than just trying to get whoever they can. And they'll get it together. I think Brent Venables is going to be good. I think the blueprint of what Kirby Smart has done at Georgia after a stand at Alabama so long as a defensive coordinator is not an unreasonable blueprint for Brent Venables and Oklahoma fans. And to feel sort of jilted by Lincoln Riley to some degree, I think maybe a 180-degree change, getting back to more physical. Brent Venables has some roots in that conference. He has some roots at Oklahoma. I think it's a nice new start for Oklahoma. I think they recovered from Lincoln Riley the best that they could, but he blew a hole in the side of the program. And not only did he leave, he's taken some of the best players. He's taken Mario Williams, the freshman receiver. He's probably going to take Caleb Williams. Like, this is just how it is. I don't think there's any choice other than to have it be a patch it together year. But I do think Brent Venables is going to be successful there long term.
Yeah, no, I think so too. And so I think that it's a good hire. I think that it's the right hire at that time. It's just going to take a second.
All right, we will take a quick break. We'll be back to finish it up with Ohio State next on the College Football Survivor Show. The College Football Survivor Show, where playoff survival is always on the line. Doug and Shahan back with Ohio State. Ohio State did not make the playoff, won the Rose Bowl. They made a big change. Jim Knowles, Oklahoma State defensive coordinator, is in. One of four new assistants for Ohio State. Total revamp of the defensive side of the ball. Kerry Combs, who'd been a longtime Ohio State assistant, started last year as a defensive coordinator, was demoted in the middle of the year. He's gone. He went to Cincinnati. Cincinnati and Ohio State basically traded coaches. Since Ohio State hired Perry Eliano, who had been the cornerbacks coach at Cincinnati, had coached Kobe Bryant and Sauce Gardner this year. Ohio State hires him. He's actually going to coach safeties at Ohio State. Kerry Combs goes to Cincinnati and takes Perry Eliano's spot. It's a Perry for Kerry swap. Ohio State also hires Tim Walton for the Jacksonville Jaguars, former Ohio State player. They're the two new secondary coaches. Jim Knowles is going to coach the linebackers. Al Washington is out. He went to Notre Dame. The only defensive coach who stuck around is Larry Johnson. That's a pretty big change. They also hired Justin Fry as a new offensive line coach. They let go of Greg Studrawa, brought in Justin Fry from UCLA. That's a pretty big coaching revamp, Shahan, but I think with what you saw from Ohio State's defense the last couple of years, I think it's probably what was needed for Ohio State to get back to the level defensively they want to be at.
Yeah, it was interesting to me that Ohio State was so, I guess, aggressive in making these staff changes, right? I mean, certainly on the defensive side of the ball, you expected it to some extent, but even on the offensive side of the ball, making a couple of changes, I think that was pretty interesting to me because the funny thing is, right, this team wasn't that far away from being competitive. They were in the national championship game a year before that. And I think it actually speaks quite well to Ryan Day to always be evaluating, right? To always be seeing, you know, can we do better? Where can we reevaluate? And I think certainly when you're at Ohio State, you have the tools to do so. And I think that he used those to full advantage. So, I mean, we talk about these three teams. Clearly, Ohio State is the closest to being championship level, to being playoff level. I mean, they were one game away from being playoff level this year. And so, you know, I mean, I think to kind of go in and really care about trying to make some of these wholesale changes that are going to, you know, maybe get you 5% further, I think that speaks well of the state of the program right now.
There is an issue, I think, with the talent on the Ohio State defensive side of the ball, that it's not only coaching and scheme that has kind of held them back the last couple of years. They had a talent dip on the defensive side of the ball. You think about where they were in 2019 when they made the playoff the first year Ryan Day was the head coach. Chase Young, Jeff Okuda, those guys were the number two and number three picks in the draft. They were the best defensive end and best cornerback on Ohio State's defense that year. That's the kind of thing that you're talking about with Ohio State. Damon Arnett was a first round pick, was a starting cornerback on that team. Like, that's what Ohio State was doing. And they just were not up to that level the past couple of years. I think you see a revival to some degree of that defensive talent. They have two five-star defensive ends who were freshmen last season, who will be second year guys, JT Tuimoloau and Jack Sawyer, are going to play big roles. Zach Harrison, who could have gone to the NFL, is staying at Ohio State for year four. He's like a all Big Ten level player who was a five-star recruit. Their linebackers need to get better. They have a five-star recruit in CJ Hicks who's coming in, who I think could play right away. And then at corner, they had a true freshman, Denzel Burke, who started all year at corner. And they have two other guys who were freshmen last year, didn't play, but are top 50 national players in Jordan Hancock and Jakalen Johnson. Like, they just, that transitional, again, the recruiting matters. They had like a little transitional bump between Urban Meyer and Ryan Day that affected some of their recruiting. For instance, in the Rose Bowl, they played Utah and they played a guy named Clark Phillips who had been committed to Ohio State, but he was recruited by Jeff Hafley, who was the defensive coordinator in 2019. And when he left, Clark Phillips decommitted and went to Utah. Clark Phillips was like the third best player on Utah's defense this year as a second-year guy, right? Clark Phillips would have started for Ohio State in 2021. He'd be starting for Ohio State in 2022. Just a couple little things like that, Shahan. It's tough that, you know, even the top-tier programs, like you need to stack talent like every year, man. Every year. So they needed to be a little more innovative with their defensive calls. Jim Knowles, I think, is going to come in here and blitz more. Oklahoma State led the nation in sacks this year. Jim Knowles defensively is going to dial it up. But I also think their talent level on defense, they're going to have three five-star defensive ends as their main defensive ends. That's back toward the Bosa brothers, Chase Young style of stuff. Four-man pressure, man. If you can get four-man pressure, it sets your defense up. If you can't, then you're playing from behind from the jump. It's just, it's a reminder, Shahan, like if you want to be the best, you can't slip up with the talent even for a year. And I think Ohio State, the last two seasons on the defensive side of the ball, was an example of that.
Well, and I'd be curious, you know, as somebody who's around the program every day, I mean, obviously, virtually all 11 players that are on the field are four and five star guys. I mean, like when you do have five star guys who at defensive end, for example, who aren't producing like that. I mean, and this is the same coaching staff, obviously, that did produce Chase Young. This is the same coaching staff that did produce Bosa brothers. I mean, what's different, I guess?
We don't know. Nothing. right? That it's Larry Johnson, the defensive line coach, has been here since 2014. He's one of the best defensive line coaches like in the history of college football. But for whatever, I mean, it's like, well, it's like, how come these guys aren't as good as the Bosa brothers and Chase Young? It's like, have you watched the NFL? Do you see what the Bosa brothers do to opposing offenses? They're just rare guys. And I always thought that Chase Young was almost like the peak of that. That it's like you went from Joey Bosa to Nick Bosa to Chase Young, and somehow you just kept getting better and better. And how can you maintain that? It's like, well, you can't. It's like, hey, how come your best defensive end isn't a consensus All-American? It's like, I don't know, just because he's pretty good instead of generationally talented. And they ran into that. But it's almost one of those where when you get used to it, because they had either a Bosa or Chase Young on the roster for 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, seven straight years.
Yeah.
It's like Chase Young was like the third Bosa brother. You had one of those guys for seven straight years. And then when you don't, it's not that they don't have good players. They just don't have fantastic players. It makes a difference. They got a little reliant on that. It's like, what's your defensive plan? It's like, I don't know. Tell Chase Young to beat that double team and go sack somebody. It's like, cool, that'll work. And then if that doesn't work as well, here you are.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I mean, that is one thing that I'm interested with Jim Knowles, right? Because Oklahoma State's defense was awesome. And I think that Malcolm Rodriguez at linebacker does not get enough credit for being as good as he was. They've got like three or four guys on their defensive line who are going to play in the NFL and be contributors, including a freshman, by the way, Colin Oliver, who is just going to be incredible. But, you know, something that I'm curious about is that, like you mentioned, with Ohio State, like so much of their defense is predicated on, well, obviously we're going to be able to rush with four, and then we'll be able to man up one side of the field because we have a first-round corner. And, like, when they didn't have that, because I think that you have to plan your defense in a way where you don't assume those things. If you have them, then you adjust. But, like, it almost seems like it went the other direction, where it was like, we assume that we have them, and if we don't, we'll adjust. And so I'm curious, you know, with Jim Knowles coming in, he's not somebody who's used to having these, you know, all-world players, right? Having, like, these clear mismatches. And I think that changes the way that you scheme for defense. And now, if you have those guys, like, it's much easier to add them into your plan than it is to take them out of your plan, I think. So that's one area where I'm curious with Jim Knowles. You know, will he come in? And I mean, this dude is maybe the best halftime adjuster on defense in college football. I mean, he is crazy. I think that there were six or seven games that the other team did not score in the second half because of his halftime adjustments. He is crazy good at halftime adjustments. So I'm curious from that perspective, you know, is Jim Knowles going to be better than Kerry Combs at, and even obviously than Matt Barnes at figuring out, okay, what do we have? How can we kind of maximize it, even if it does mean that we have limitations?
There's been a lot of discussion too in the Ryan Day era of they went to a single high safety look when Ryan Day took over. Ohio State had kind of played cover two, man up on the corners for most of the Urban Meyer era. And they start this single high safety look, which gets an extra guy in the box against the run, but then you play because you don't play any good quarterbacks in the Big Ten. So that makes sense. Get an extra guy in the box. Then you get in the playoff and it's like, oh, well, our guys can throw. So, you know, they start in 2019 and then, you know, when they played Clemson in 2019 and 2020 in the playoff in the semifinals, it's like, oh, now all of a sudden they're playing two deep safeties, like for the first time all year, because now you're playing Trevor Lawrence. So like there's been, you know, sort of the shift from single high to two safety. And I think it feels like Ryan Day just hired Jim Knowles to be like, you're in charge of that, because it's sort of been like, well, Ryan Day would say, well, it's my style of defense. I want to do this. Whoever the coordinator is has to come in and play my style. And I don't think that's going to be the case anymore. So Jim Knowles is going to do what Jim Knowles wants to do. I think that's what they hired him to scheme it up. So as much as I said there was a talent thing, there was a disconnect. There were issues all like at everything. Ryan Day always says it's talent. It's either personnel, coaching, or scheme. And like with the defense the last couple of years, it was all three things. So I think the talent, the personnel is going to get a little better because the recruiting is back in shape on that side of the ball. They brought in new secondary coaches, so okay. And then they brought in a new scheme because Jim Knowles does what Jim Knowles wants to do. I think that defensive side will get straightened out to some degree. And then offensively, I mean, the world saw it. Jackson Smith and Jigba went bazonkers in the Rose Bowl. Jackson Smith and Jigba started the year as Ohio State's number three receiver. He ended the year with the most receiving yards ever in the history of the Big Ten. For a guy who was the number three receiver for Ohio State. So Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson are going to be gone. They're going to have other five stars, Emeka Egbuka, Marvin Harrison Jr. Julian Fleming filling in behind Jaxon Smith-Njigba. They lose Nicholas Petit-Frere, their left tackle, who will probably be like a second or third round pick. But DeJuan Jones, their right tackle, who they thought might leave, decided he's going to stay. They still have Trevion Henderson at running back, who ran for 1,200 yards as a true freshman. They've got it going offensively, Shahan. And I think the idea that C.J. Stroud worked it out, you could see it happening. The decisions he was making, the way he was reading defenses in the last third of the season, was so different than what he was doing in the first third of the season. Of course, he's a young quarterback, but he really got a handle on things by the end. He threw 6 touchdown passes in the first half against Michigan State. It was one of the best halves you'll see a quarterback play. To have C.J. Stroud and Trevion Henderson back as second year, and Jaxon Smith-Njigba, they're all going to be second year starters. That's a pretty good place to start offensively. And that just puts them in a situation where they've got a shot against almost anybody, which is why, you know, hey, what if Ohio, we talked a lot about, well, the Ohio State offense versus the Georgia defense. Doesn't mean it's a sure thing against defenses like Georgia and Clemson and Alabama. But when you've got guys like that, you've got a shot. And they had that last year, and they should have that again in 2022.
How do you feel about, obviously they recruited the position well, but how do you feel about that wide receiver room? Because you mentioned Jaxon Smith-Njigba, he will be the biggest star in college football next year at wide receiver, probably, you know, but after that, I mean, who is it? Do they feel confident in the guys that they have?
So it's one of the things, again, it's very hard at any top tier program. I always get caught in between. You don't just want to assume the next guy is going to be as good as the last guy. But then sometimes it's like, oh man, they're losing these guys. I don't know what they're going to do. And then it's like, they're bringing in the next 5-star. It's fine. And you feel like an idiot questioning it. But then sometimes it's like what's happened at defensive end. It's like, well, they lost Chase Young. Oh, will the next guys be as good? It's like, no, they'll be good, but they won't be as good. So will they be as good as Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson, who are both going to be first round picks in April? I don't know. Emeka Egbuka, who was a true freshman last year, will be a second-year guy, was the number one receiver recruit in the country. So, like, he's on the Jaxon Smith-Njigba path a little bit, that to have sort of a smaller role, like a limited role as a true freshman, and then maybe break out in year two, that's on the table for Emeka Egbuka. And then Julian Fleming was the number one receiver recruit the year before that. He's going to be a third-year guy. He's been sort of bothered by injuries for most of his career so far. You know, it's like they're losing 2 first-round receivers. The guys filling in were literally the number one receiver recruits in their classes. So I don't know. I don't think they'll be quite as good, because I think Garrett Wilson was phenomenal. And I do think, even though Jaxon Smith-Njigba did it without Wilson and Olave in the Rose Bowl, all 3 of those guys opened some things up for each other. I think Egbuka is going to be really good, though. And then Marvin Harrison Jr., not quite a 5-star, high 4-star, smooth, bigger. Dad's a Hall of Famer. Like, there's enough options there that it's probably going to be about the same. I think it might be 90% as good as the receiver room was this year, but Stroud will be better because Stroud's going to be good from the jump.
But at the same time, has Ryan Day proven that he can win without multiple Texas receivers? I mean, you know, we got people from these trash states like Washington. I mean, come on. It's they're not coming from Texas high school football. What do they know? Although I do also know that that Caleb Burton from Lake Travis is coming in, and he is very, very good.
No, yeah. Caleb Burton is like a true freshman who will have a little dose of it this year and then be ready for year two. They've got the assembly line. It's just lined up. Sark's going crazy, but it's just lined up. So, I think the offense will be good, but they're going to get tested. Opener against Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And then, like, right now, they've got probably, like, 5 top 25 teams on their schedule. Obviously, they finish with Michigan. They've also got Michigan State in the Big Ten East. And then their crossover games with the West this year, sometimes with the crossovers, you get lucky, and it's like, ah, I'm playing Illinois and Purdue. They have Wisconsin and Iowa, who should be 2 top 25 teams as crossovers, both at home for Ohio State. And then you throw in Penn State, depending how good Penn State's going to be. There are times when Ohio State has a schedule. 2019 was one of those years. Ohio State made the playoff in 2019. They played like 2 games. They played like 9 or 10 games where it was like, well, they'll win that by 30. That's not what this year is going to be. So Notre Dame, Iowa, Wisconsin, those teams are not always on the schedule. And then if Michigan, Michigan State, and Penn State are real, that's half the games are tests, Shahan. And then you wait and see, does Maryland jump up and do anything? Does, I don't know, is Indiana get it back together? Probably not. But, you know, they're going to have a more difficult road than they sometimes have in the Big Ten with the schedule of 2022.
Yeah, I think it'll be a good test. Opening up with Notre Dame is going to be a great test. I mean, I think that they are going to want to do some dynamic passing stuff. So I think it'll be a good test to see for Jim Knowles. You know, how does he adjust to facing off against something like that with this defense? And even, I mean, they're not a good team, but like stylistically, Arkansas State is going to be kind of interesting just to kind of see how do you adjust to a team that wants to pass the ball a lot, right? I mean, I think that from that perspective, it'll be a good sort of trial run in some ways for Ohio State's defense and trying to run some stuff that isn't one high, right? Like, I think that'll be a good test from that perspective. So I think the schedule sets it pretty well. You know, they don't play their tougher games until mostly the second half of the year. You know, starting October 8th with Michigan State is really where it kind of starts. And from then on, you know, you have time to kind of grow and get together. And so I think that Ohio State is Ohio State, and they have the pieces and schedule to be Ohio State in 2022.
So do you think Ohio State will be in the thick of the playoff race next season?
Yeah, no question about it.
Yeah, I think so too. The Big Ten's getting a little better, right? And again, I continue to be fascinated by what's going to happen at Penn State with Drew Aller, that Penn State's going to have like a big-time quarterback prospect for the first time in the James Franklin era, and the first time in a long time at Penn State. And that's no disrespect to Trace McSorley, who was a winner, and, you know, Darryl Clark, like 15 years ago, was a guy who was a winner. Michael Robinson was a winner, like that, but they weren't like this. They weren't like pro prospect dudes that Drew Aller seems like. So it's interesting how that elevates Penn State. And if Michigan stays at this level, and again, all this talk around Jim Harbaugh, will Jim Harbaugh be back? Not be back, but Michigan's recruiting on a higher level. Can Mel Tucker keep this going at Michigan State? You know, it makes it interesting when a conference is more than just the team at the top. And I think the Big Ten is making progress toward that. All right. So to wrap it up, we both think Clemson and Ohio State will be in the thick of the playoff race in 2022. We think Oklahoma has sort of a patch it together year that may drop them out of that before they maybe rebuild under Brent Venables. We will be off next week, just refreshing, you know, just hanging out, just doing our thing. And then we'll be back. And at some point we'll start our series. Could Nick Saban win a national championship at your school in the next 5 years? Hopefully we'd like to get some interviews with people in and around the college football playoff. Interesting plans for the offseason. We appreciate you guys being part of it. Again, if you haven't ever subscribed to it, the Tuesday podcast for Apple Podcast subscribers only, it's $2.99 a month. And you get those Tuesday podcasts on Tuesday. We did Who's the Next Georgia? Who's the Next Cincinnati? Who's the Next Michigan? I thought it was a good show. And if you like this one, I think you probably like that one if you wouldn't mind ponying up the $2.99 a month to do that. For now. For Shahan Jeharaja of CBS Sports, I'm Doug Lamorese, and that was the College Football Survivor Show.
The College Football Survivor Show, where playoff survival is always on the line.